Get ready for some fun. This is Malcolm and You Know Who with Malcolm Out Loud. Open-minded discussion that's truthful, respectful, and direct. This is real life on the brink of greatness.
You know, I wonder how many of you out there still feel safe and how many are just ridden with fear and just worried about terrorism. Have you altered your life? Or are things just business as usual for you? You're watching the news. You pay attention. What about the energy that it takes in all of this? And are you paying attention to what's important to you and your family and your associates? It's Malcolm Out Loud here. Welcome. Well, this is real life. We're going to talk about it today on the brink of greatness here. And one of the big news stories that got my attention, Saudi Arabia has announced the formation of a 34-state Islamic military coalition to combat terrorism. That's a big story, my friends. Not hearing a lot about it, but this is a big, big story. Why? Because we haven't had a 34-state Islamic military coalition against anything. In fact, we haven't been able to get the Middle East countries to agree on much of anything. And that's part of the challenge. And then, you know, we have our own challenges here in this country, and we have an administration who doesn't want to lead or fight these kinds of problems. And then what you have is the result of terrorism gone amok. And then you have fear becoming the new world order. And then it's not good from there. You have a breakdown of civilization at that point. It's no longer a civilized society. Well, I'm going to put it in the context today. You can understand, that's for sure. And we'll talk about this. I want to touch on Donald Trump and a Group Anonymous. And I got a fantastic guest for you that will speak about energy and knows a lot about energy. She's an expert in it. Talk about a lot of this terrorism around the world and what it means to us and how we can live our lives and what we should do about it. Of course, we'll have some life lessons as well. But I want to talk about that first story about Saudi Arabia first. Well, again, they've announced this formation, get a load of this, of a 34-state Islamic military coalition, combat terrorism. And they're not just saying ISIS or ISIL terrorism, my friends. They're talking about all terrorism. And they made that very clear. And I quote, they say, the countries here mentioned have decided on the formation of a military alliance led by Saudi Arabia. Yay! All to fight terrorism with a joint operations center based in Riyadh, that's the capital in Saudi Arabia now, to coordinate and support military operations. Now, it's a long list of countries, my friends. Egypt, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and you know, Islamic countries too, like Turkey, Malaysia, Pakistan, some of the Gulf Arab and African states were mentioned. It's just 34 countries. It's a long list. I'm not going to read them all right now. But, well, this announcement, you know, they say, they go on to say, and I quote, that we have a duty to protect the Islamic nation from the evils of all terrorist groups and organizations, whatever their sect and name, which wreak death and corruption on earth and aim to terrorize the innocent. Wow. To which I say, it's about time. Where y'all been? Where have you been? Now, in this group, Iran is nowhere to be found in this group. It's like, is that a surprise to anybody? No, they're too busy building their nuclear state right now. That's a whole other host of problems for another day. But, you know, the Muslims, they're Shia Muslims in Iran, and they're Sunni Muslims in Saudi Arabia. And these guys are like East and West. It's like North and South. It's like, you know, these two just fight. They've never gotten along. They haven't gotten along in history. They'll probably never get along. But Iran was absent from all of this. They had no part of it. Like, that doesn't really surprise me. I don't think it should surprise you either. Now, the campaign, they say, will coordinate efforts to fight terrorism in Iraq, Syria, Libya, Egypt, Afghanistan. You know, now, they didn't get into all the details, so I don't want to get ahead of myself here and think we've solved everything, my friends, because we have not. But this is at least a positive sign of something to happen. And again, the fact that it's not just ISIS or ISIL, but it's all terrorism groups, I think is a very, very big thing. You know, talking about the Muslim population, obviously when Donald Trump made these comments in recent weeks here about Muslims, and he suggested a temporary, well, I don't know what you want to call it, restraining order, huh? He called it a temporary move, if you will, a movement to ban Muslims from coming into the United States until we, and I'll use his words, until we know what the hell is going on, until the politicians can figure that out. Well, that's being optimistic right out of the gate that they'll ever figure anything out, because I'm not real optimistic on that, my friends. And I'm not being cynical with you, I'm just being factual. But he goes on to say, you know, that he wants to do this for a temporary period of time. A lot of people say, you could hear the oohs and ahs all over the place. Like, oh, man, this guy, he's... But you know what? His numbers went up again. A lot of Americans agree with this, believe it or not. It's a pretty extreme idea, I know, to ban any group of any kind, of any sort, of any type. And a lot of people aren't going to like it. And I bet our next guest won't like it either. I can tell you that. But, you know, I don't know. Is there another answer? Does somebody have an answer? Can you send me your answer? Email me your answer to speakup@malcolmoutloud.com. And if you disagree with me on all this, email me at shutup@malcolmoutloud.com. They both work. Both email addresses are functional. Take your pick. Pick one and send it to me. I'll read it. I'll tell people about it. No problem. You don't have to agree with me. I don't really care. I'm not here to make everybody feel warm and fuzzy all hours of the day. I'm here to give you the facts. So this anonymous group, you heard about this anonymous group? They're after Donald Trump as well. Oh, they've gone after Church of Scientology, Westboro Baptist Church. They've gone after WikiLeaks and Occupy movements and, you know, corporations, PayPal, MasterCard, Visa. They've gone after countries, child pornography sites, ISIS. These people, they just get up on a bad day and they go after everybody. But a lot of the people they're going after are good. So let's call them a hacktivist group. It's an activist, but they hack into technology and they do a lot of damage. So let's call them a hacktivist group. Well, they sent a notice out there. Greetings, citizens of the world. We are anonymous. Donald Trump, it's come to our attention that you want to ban all Muslims to enter the United States. This policy is going to have a huge impact. It's what ISIS wants. The more Muslims feel sad, the more they'll join and recruit them. Well, I don't really all agree with that. I mean, they're recruiting the kids out there regardless of this, my friends. So it says, we are anonymous, we're legion, we do not forgive, expect us. And on that note, they hacked Trump Tower in New York. Can you imagine this fight? It's going to be one of the biggest fights we've ever had, anonymous and Donald Trump. Wow, it's going to be a big one, my friends. I don't know what's going to happen, what the result of that will be. But I wonder, is all this negative energy having an impact on our nation? That's what I worry about. Just ahead, a best-selling author and a woman who is an expert when it comes to our energy. You'll know who that is on the other side of the break. Well, our world and our lives have become increasingly interdependent, so when our neighbor is harmed, it affects us too. Therefore, we have to abandon outdated notions of them and us, and think of our world much more in terms of a great us, a greater human family. Well, those are the words of the Dalai Lama. It's Malcolm Out Loud. Welcome back. We've been talking about negative energy and the impact it's having on our nation. I'd like you to meet the WHO, Therese Taponi. She's the author of 6 books. Her most recent book focuses on her own personal life tragedy with the goal of helping others. It's called The Gifts of Grief, Finding Light in the Darkness of Loss. She's a licensed heart math certified trainer, a board certified hypnotherapist, and the founder of Whole Heart. Welcome, Therese.
Thank you, Malcolm. It's great to be with you.
It's great to be with you. Now, let me tell folks that you have appeared on my television show a couple of times at Malcolm Out Loud TV, right?
I have.
And we've had some fun there. We've done a couple of great shows, and you were great. And I thought this is a great opportunity to get you back on radio, which we haven't done before, and talk a little bit about this. So I want to start here. You wrote a very interesting article in Out Loud America about extremism that caught my attention. And I want to read a small paragraph that you have in here, and then we'll comment on it from there. These are the words now of Therese, and I quote, when Timothy McVeigh murdered nearly 170 people and wounded another 600, the public was outraged, but gradually slid into a zone of thinking, he was just one of those crazy people. Life went on. Following the unimaginable attack on the World Trade Center, we went to war in the wrong country, led by a government-created story floated on fear. Here's that word again, fear. Horror greeted Sandy Hook and the subsequent massacres of Americans by Americans, but little arose from the great ocean of outrage. A few websites, a few attempts to pass sensible gun legislation, a suggestion that white crime was always created by those who were mentally ill. So that was part of that column you wrote on extremism. And so I want to ask you, I want to start here and ask you, I summed this up initially, this is me speaking now, I say the more things change in this country, to me, it seems like the more they stay the same. And I want to ask you, Therese, are you saying here in this column on extremism, are you saying that we're far too complacent in this country?
I am. I'm saying that we're far too judgmental, and that we also, we separate out times of horror, like the ones that we can handle and the ones that we can't handle, and we choose subconsciously to go after the ones that, like you said in the quote of the Dalai Lama, that we see as other. Everything that we see that happens, let's say, on Wall Street, in the business world, any atrocities that happened when people lost all their money because of white-collar crime, we tend to separate that out and say that's just a one-time thing. You know, that's an aberration. But we are able to get really angry and really combine our energy when it's other. Certainly in the article that I wrote, we were talking about the Muslims.
Right, correct. Okay. Which brings me to the point that, you know, one of the ones who's been in the news recently on the Muslim piece is Donald Trump. He's the leading contender for the Republican nomination for president. And he sort of spoke and put all Muslims in one conversation, I guess, as you had quoted here, as evil and demanded they be barred from our country, which I'm not quite sure it's exactly that way. But what I want to ask you is, do we ever consider profiling in this country? Can it ever be a good thing, or do you think it's like it's bad?
No, I think there's a certain amount of it that we have to come to when we're using logic and heart, where we say, you know, this is a time like no other, mm-hmm. and we need to, I wouldn't call it profiling. I think it's just a very careful way of monitoring whoever wants to come into this country. And we've done it forever. It's not like we're installing something new. My great-grandparents and grandparents were Irish immigrants, and they were certainly profiled. So I think it's more like, should we continue to look at it but not overreact to a group of people, in this case the Muslims, who work beside you in your workplace and are in our army, are in our police forces, they're our neighbors. Muslim is a way of describing a religion, not a person. Off on the wrong track.
But yet, Therese, when you look at history, you know, a lot of times we have to look at history to be able to understand what's going to happen tomorrow. Our officials do that, professionals do that. When you look at history in recent years, really all the way back to 9/11 and before, and circumstances all the way forward here, isn't there a track here now when it comes to Muslims, and that there is a percentage of them that seem to want to harm people? They certainly want to do harm to Americans. Would you agree with that statement?
I don't agree with that statement, because putting Muslims in one basket, and they're all different. There's different branches of Muslim practice. There's different people from different parts of the world. The people that are, you know, it's just like it was people from Saudi Arabia who flew the planes into the World Trade Center. We don't even think of that because we're allies with Saudi Arabia. So we see them as different people. We don't see them as Muslims. We see them as discontented terrorists.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think that when we have pods of things that happen, and in this case they're Middle Eastern people, or in another case they're people fighting for the right to bear guns and protect themselves in the mountains of Texas or whatever, it's, you just can't label everybody the same way, because it's, there are people who are operating out of a Muslim religion that they see as peaceful. It's sort of like us using the Old Testament and all the gore and guts to say that's what the Bible is about. And when we say that that's what their religion is about, it isn't. It's just a group of really angry, disaffected nationalists.
Okay. All right. I don't totally agree with that in the sense of this, that when you really break it down and we're talking about the Muslim population, and if you really read the Quran and you understand Muhammad and, you know, again, this is my opinion now, how he hijacked the Bible and hijacked the Old Testament and a lot of the things he did. And the belief that it's, I mean, there is a belief within that culture that it is, if you want to see Allah, if you want to go there and you want to go to that heaven that they call it, then that it's okay, that it's proper to harm people, that it is okay. And that seems, and if you read, and I have, the dangers of Islam and what's going on out there, there is a real danger to that. I mean, do you see that or do you dispute that?
I dispute it only because I have read it and because I know a lot of people of Middle Eastern extraction, and I know that, and I'm a student of history, so I go way back to where I read, you know, where before there was an Old Testament, there were stories that were told by the Babylonians and the Mesopotamians about the Ark, and the, you know, the whale and Jonah and the flood. All of those stories were out there being told by tribes as they passed through different countries. And a whole thing grew up around it where there's even a story, 3300 BC, about a king, I believe he was in Iraq, modern-day Iraq, was Mesopotamia then, who was found in a basket floating on a river. That was way prior to the Old Testament. So I think there's a lot of stories that are mixed up in a lot of the books, and then they've been translated and retranslated. And so I feel the same way about the Quran.
All right, all right. Now, when you, you know, in the point real quickly of Donald Trump, he didn't brand all Muslims as evil and demanded they be barred from the country. I don't think that's an accurate statement, which is in that column you wrote. I think what he said is said, wait, we got to figure out his words now. What the hell is going on, he said. And we need to put the brakes on this for a short period of time to figure it out. That's what he said. And yet, you know, his numbers have gone up since he made that statement. So most Americans evidently are agreeing with his statement. But he didn't say forever. He didn't say, he just said he has a lot of Muslim friends himself, he said. But he said it in a way that it just disputed the PC culture. And but you still disagree with it. You don't think that's the right approach, huh?
Well, I think that he came back later when he saw, you know, the things that happened. He came back later and said, well, I just want a, you know, a short term with this. But okay. I still think that it's the wrong target, saying Muslims rather than saying extremists.
All right, it may be. It may be. I'm going to have you hold that thought right there as we take a quick break here. We're going to continue this culture of a PC culture and talk about the Earth's magnetic field. We'll be right back with Therese Taponi. Well, we are back with you here. It's Malcolm Out Loud, and we are having quite an engaging conversation with Therese Taponi. Again, Therese is the she's a best-selling author. She's a fabulous writer, actually. Her skills as an author are incredible. Her latest book, The Gifts of Grief, Find the Lights of the Darkness of Loss. Great to have you, Therese. I love having you on here. And, you know, the whole thing, why I enjoy having you on is, to me, you make people think. And whereas, you know, we may think a little differently sometimes, you still help me understand the full conversation, which is really what I try to do on this show. That's what we're all about here. When I say this is real life, on the brink of greatness, Therese, that's what I'm speaking about. This is real life. We were talking about the PC culture before the break. So I want to ask you here, it seems to me that if you follow a lot of these talking points, that, you know, we're talking about, again, I think your words, stereotyping over a billion people. We're talking about Muslims. The fact that there are nearly equal numbers of Christians and Muslims in the world requires that we learn to live in peace. And this is what you say. And what my point is now, what I say is that we can talk peace all day long, but that doesn't always make it so. So your point in your article is that, hey, listen, there are a lot of Christians, a lot of Muslims. Let's learn to live in peace. But Therese, here's my problem with that. If they don't want to live in peace, if they want to tear us apart and bomb us and kill us, how do we do this? How do we live in peace if they don't want to?
Well, you're using the they word, and that's the big thing. That's when we talk about energy, the energy of the they word is very, very powerful. And it's not they, it's some people. It's a small, numerically small group that wants to wipe out the U.S. It's sort of, or the European culture or whatever it is. It's always been that way.
Therese, I want to say something here, though. Hold on now.
Yeah.
But that small number of people you're talking about now, I want to tell you something. It is a growing phenomenon. It's a growing culture. They are training the kids. I mean, I've watched these videos for my news programs, and they are training a whole culture. And Therese, they are all over the world. They're everywhere. They're in Africa. They're in Asia. They're everywhere. They're here in the United States. So this small little, you know, infancy group you're speaking about is growing by the leaps and bounds every day as we speak right this minute.
I agree. And I noticed yesterday that there was an article about the large number of Middle Eastern and Muslim people who have gotten together to say, you know, make videos and say, this is who we are. We are not the IRA. You know, we are, it's like Tony Blair said, you know, we were being, if we can remember back to when the Irish were bombing subways in London, they never blocked the Irish from their soil because they knew that that was the way to make it worse because they're already people who feel that they're marginalized.
Okay, all right.
And the majority of people in this country who are Muslim are peace-loving and fit into our culture beautifully.
All right, that may be, and I'm not going to dispute. I love all people. I understand this. But I want to move on in the conversation to say that I think we can agree that there are some bad seeds out there. And the real problem and challenge
Absolutely.
Here is how do we continue to find those bad seeds and be able to nip that in the bud? And I think we have to do what we have to do, whatever that may be, to nip that in the bud. I don't think you'd kind of disagree with that. I mean, you're worried about the safety and security of
No.
our country, right?
I am, certainly. And I feel like, you know, we can go back in time as far as we want and see the mistakes that created this, but we are where we are.
Okay.
And we need to try a different approach. I mean, going into Iraq created ISIS, in my opinion, and the opinion of a lot of
right.
people that I've
right.
talked to from CENTCOM here in Tampa.
Right.
So, all right, that's done. The genie's out of the bottle. Now what do we do? That's a political solution that is so screwed up in Washington right now, and
Therese, let me ask you real fast.
Anybody there?
Okay. All right. Let me ask you, and just a quick answer, so we can move on within 30 seconds, if you can, on this. Define for me a different idea. When you say you try a different idea to solve this problem, do you have a different idea?
That's what I'm saying. It's not. It's so big and it's so out of the bottle now that my work is all about energy. My work is all about turning the okay. energy okay. toward a positive basis where it changes the energy on the planet.
All right, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that because you know something I've noticed over the years, Therese. When you're in, I've noticed this in city after city and town after town. And I'll bring it to this: when your football team, your favorite football team, loses the big game. The whole community goes, oh, and you know, you kind of feel
exactly.
like, you feel like crap the next day. I mean, you really do. You kind of like, oh man. And yet when the team wins, it's like, yay. And it's like, you can
yeah.
do anything. And
yeah.
the whole community feels that way. Do you agree with that?
I agree. Absolutely. And I agree that it's a choice. Yeah. Once we become aware of energy and on the personal basis, our energy extends out from our body and has been measured by science, and it's a fact that we project who and what we are on a minute-to-minute basis by broadcasting it from our bodies, from the heart. And this is measurable. So they are able to measure what happens to people when they go into a negative place and what happens when more than one person goes into a negative place, to the point where thousands of people on the planet broadcasting negative energy from their batteries create a whole thing like you're talking about taking place in that football field. Now we're all angry at the other. We're the blue team, they're the red team. Now the red team is them and they cheated or they did something. Whatever it is, we become this mass of energy that divides people.
Well, Therese, I think the big word here is fear, isn't it? I mean, what the bad guys want is they want us to have fear, don't they?
Absolutely, and we're obliging them.
We are, and they all do that. Movie theaters with your family, sporting events, restaurants, cafes like in Paris and all that. It's all become sort of a fair game now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that we really need to be aware on a daily basis of a very simple thing, and a very simple thing is to be aware that we broadcast energy every second, every minute of the day, and what kind of energy do we choose? And you know what it does to your health. Let's say that you watched a program about something and it made you very fearful. You can feel it in your body. You can literally feel your heart changes its rhythm. Your body feels tense. And then you don't know, but you're releasing about 1,500 chemicals into your system that are causing disease.
Yeah.
So if you only say to people it's healthier to put out positive energy than it is to put out negative energy. Just think about your individual health. Be selfish.
Right.
Don't think about the whole world.
Well,
and then when we combine all of that, it's an overwhelming amount of energy.
And, you know, you have no argument for me there, Therese. No argument for me there at all. But listen, I want to give people your website. Well, that's it. You shut me up there. How's that? So let me give people your website, TheresePapponi.com, TheresePapponi.com. Therese, thanks for joining me. It's been a great conversation. We'll have more ahead, and we'll be right back. I've got some more thoughts on energy and our magnetic field and what we can do to improve our lives. Be right back with you. Welcome back, and thanks for joining me today. We've learned a lot already, and I got a lot more to go with you. I'm going to do some life lessons in a little bit here. But, you know, all of this material we talk about, again, is back at brinkofgreatness.com. Feel free to check that out. It's a whole lot there, a whole lot of life lessons, and a whole lot of great people to celebrate. You know, there are a lot of awesome people out there that belong on the brink of greatness. Brink stories is what I call them. Part of my goal and my job here is to point out what's right with our country as well. Yeah, we've got to cover the tough topics, the hard choices, the difficult conversations. You can't put them off and ignore them. But I think we learn something in the process, and certainly when we can be civil about it all, and I think we've accomplished something at that point. You know, if you've been to a football game or a basketball game or something, there's nothing better than those last couple of minutes of a game. And I always wonder, you know, like the last 2 minute, the 2 minute warning on a football game, you know, you're, 80 yards down the field and maybe you're down by 5 points. So a field goal won't do it. You need a touchdown. It's amazing to me, the energy and the power of that team in the last 2 minutes of a game, what they can accomplish. More games have been won in the last 2 minutes than in any other time period of a game. That's the same for basketball, for that matter. You know, growing up, I used to go see the basketball games, baseball. I love sports. And I remember seeing I used to watch the Celtics quite a bit. And, you know, you'd see them and I can't even tell you how many games they won in the last couple of minutes of a game. It's just mind-blowing, really. It's just when you thought, they couldn't win, and then they did, like, the impossible, like a three-point play with, like, a second left on the clock or something. And they win the game by a point. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. But it is. There's something. And I've often said, by the way, if we could package that power in the last 2 minutes of any professional game, when we really get our, our juices flowing and we're ready to go at it. I mean, we're ready to do bad. I mean, oh, man. Man, that would be some sort of vitamin, I'll tell you. We could get that and sell that around. That'd be worth a fortune. But, the last couple of minutes, what I call it is our collectiveness. Our collectiveness. There's something in the power and the energy of our collectiveness as a group. You see it in sports. You see it in real life. You see it in all kinds of things that we do where there's a collectiveness about us. That's sort of what Therese Tapponi was talking about. And when she talks about energy, she kind of gets more into the heartbeat of Mother Earth and the magnetic fields, and that there's something about when hundreds and thousands or millions of people feel a certain way. Well, there's an emotion involved in that. Like I said, when your favorite team loses the Super Bowl or the World Series, you won't find people celebrating the next day. There's not a lot of excitement to go around. There's a lot of sadness. People get real sad. There's a collectiveness to that sadness. And there's power in it as well. So you see that in all kinds of things and events. You sometimes see it with death. You see it in all kinds of things where there's a collectiveness to how we feel. And the energy that is absorbed within all of that is pretty passionate, pretty strong. But you know, today when we have this new world order and we're fighting terrorism and we have to be diligent for the bad guys. And I don't say we alter our life and we totally turn it upside down backwards. I don't think we can do that. I don't think we can do that at all, you know? I think we have to be diligent. I think we have to be careful. But I think we have to go living our lives. And I think, you know, as we've pointed out, and it's been pointed out, those are the minority. You know, those things are the minority. It doesn't mean it's going to change or impact your life, you know, if you think about it. So, you know, one of my political heroes, now I'm going to give away a lot when I tell you this, but I'm going to tell you. One of my political heroes, yeah, it was. It was Ronald Reagan, I admit. And one of the things I enjoyed about Reagan and always liked as a young man is his motto and his firm belief in peace through strength. Peace through strength. Wow. We don't have that anymore. We've lost that in our country, in our society. You know, I say we must be diligent, we must be prepared, we must be ready to strike. And we all want peace, as Therese Taponi was saying. Yeah, peace, strength, energy. But I don't really think we want ignorance. There's a balance between all of that. But I think peace through strength. I think we need to be, you know, fortified as a country. I think we need to be mindful as a country. I think we need to be compassionate as a country. But we don't need to be stupid. We don't need to be stupid, my friends. So it's time to take that back and not so much worry about the PC crowd. You know, I think this PC business is getting us in a whole host of trouble. Now, listen, I'm not exactly saying that I think the poster child for this whole thing is Donald Trump. That's not what I'm saying. I don't say he's, you know, the poster child for what we should all be doing today. I think there are sometimes gentler way to handle things, sure. I think, you know, sometimes he just cuts through the mustard. And, you know, a lot of CEOs are like that. Actually, a lot of chairmen of the boards are like that. I worked with a lot of them in corporate boardrooms over the decades. And, you know, many of them are that way. They don't sugarcoat things, my friends. That's why they make the tough decisions, why they're in the boardroom. But, you know, I've interacted with a lot of them, my fair share. And they can be tough. They can be real tough. But, you know, in the case of Trump, he's out there. He doesn't have time for the sugarcoat, and he moves the conversation along pretty fast. You have to pay attention. And he's going to offend some people. He's going to offend some people today, and a lot of people don't like it. And the comments he makes then, they're taken, you know, they're misconstrued or they're construed and they're taken out of context. And, you know, next thing you know, they take the statement he made and, you know, again, they change it. They put it out there. Now, listen, I want to be clear with you right now. I don't know who I support in 2016. I don't have that answer for you today. I don't know who that candidate is. I'm not suggesting to you that, oh, I'm Donald Trump. He's my man. I'm going to vote for him. I'm not suggesting that at all. No. I'm suggesting we keep our minds open. We be diligent. We look at all the candidates when it comes to this race. I think it's an important election coming up. There's no doubt in my mind. But I think as a country, we have to get, we have to be fearful, but more so fearless. Peace through strength. We need to give our resources back to our military. We need to stand taller. We need to not spend so much time worrying about what all of us say and turn our words into more action. Do something about it. Hold our political leaders accountable. That's what we need to do. If we're going to take it back, we need to hold people accountable. And I think everybody has to understand that, you know, your political stripe, I'm for one tired of the far left lunatics, the extremists on the left and the extremists on the right. I think they're both guilty as charged, my friends. I think they're both guilty for disrupting our conversation and our flow of intelligent talk. So no, I'm not a fan of using all colorful language and swearing and screaming at each other and what have you. I don't think that accomplishes a lot. That's not what I mean by get out loud. I think out loud means to be truthful, have passion. I have heart. I have big heart. People who know me say, Malcolm, you have more heart than you ever let on. Yeah, I know. I got a big heart. I give you that. I worry about everybody. I worry about the injustices in the world. You bet. So I have heart. I have passion. I have compassion. But I'm not stupid, my friends. And I want to be a gentleman. But you know what? If the other clowns in the room are not going to be ladies and gentlemen, then watch out. I'll tackle them. And I think that's what it is with Trump and why that moment he has in the media. He has sort of this love-hate relationship with the media. They don't know on one day whether they love him or hate him. And, of course, he's ratings. He's a ratings machine, so they all love him. And, of course, the left media wing, which is a good part of the media today, they just find him a mecca for ratings. I mean, they're just using him all day long. They don't believe in anything he says. They don't like his philosophy, his agenda. But they're using him. Absolutely. He knows it. They're using each other. But, you know, folks, our whole political spectrum in this country is based on that. They're all using each other. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, I have an interesting piece. I want to bring you some life lessons on the brink of greatness. And it's called 16 Sun Tzu Life Lessons. 16 Sun Tzu. You remember Sun Tzu? He's the ancient Chinese military general, strategist, and philosopher. Man, this was amazing. You read the book, The Art of War, didn't you? It's kind of a book you had to read, well, not once, probably twice, maybe three times even. You know, just to follow some of his words. He has a lot of great stuff in there, a lot of great quotes, a lot of meanings. But, and again, you got to go look this article up. You can also find it on my Twitter feed, at Malcolm Out Loud. Connect with me on Twitter. And hashtag at Malcolm Out Loud, too. You'll find a whole lot of articles and stuff from previous shows I put up there for you, so you can go get them easy. Or you can dive into the platform stuff. We got all kinds of stuff out there, folks. Just look up Malcolm Out Loud, and you'll get more than you bargained for. There's plenty out there. But some of these lessons are pretty cool, and they're worth looking at, my friends. Now, the second one on here, I'm going to just pick a few here now quickly. If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles, is what Sun Tzu says. I'll translate that for you. If you know all that needs to be known, there is no room for fear of nothingness. Ain't that cool? You know? Another one he did. He who knows when he can fight and when he cannot will be victorious. I like that one. Translated, the bigger man will always admit to himself he can and cannot win a fight. Swallow your pride and live to fight another day. I like Sun Tzu. Anyways, find the story on our Twitter feed. It's been good hanging with you today, my friends. Another great production, and thanks for being here. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Remember, get involved, get loud.